And welcome back to the second half of Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis, and there's more important information coming up, so please keep that pencil and recycled paper handy. And right now we're going to get off into our commentary like we do every week. This week's commentary is The Abuse of Other People's Hard Times, The Politics of Forest Fires, and this is written by Tom Power. To most of us, it is unseemly, and at the very least, to take advantage of other people's tragedy, hard times, and fear. Yet some folks driven by profits and political ambition or both simply cannot resist. That is the case with those seeking advantage from the terror most of us in the Northern Rockies are experiencing as fires, or at least the smoke from fires, threaten to engulf us and render our homes and hometowns uninhabitable. Except for suffocating the ash fallout from Mount St. Helens, we in the Northern Rockies have had the luxury of observing natural catastrophes at a distance on our TV sets. When floods swept down the Mississippi Valley and its tributaries in the upper Midwest, simultaneously drowning and burning major cities, when hurricanes repeatedly threatened to drive the sea across Florida and well into the Carolina coastlands, when earthquakes threatened to drop large swaths of Southern California into the sea, we in Montana could shudder with a distant fear and easy sympathy, for we face no such immediate threats of natural disaster. This summer's wildfires in the Northern Rockies have changed that. While most of us have suffered with the unavoidable fire-related anxieties, we have also been impressed by the hard work and heroism of both neighbors and anonymous firefighters. But others have tried to profit from the fires and the primordial fears they evoke. The forest products industry has been in the lead of this exploitation of other people's hard times. The forest products industry wants access as cheaply as it can to get as much wood fiber as possible. It once had privileged access to forested public lands. As the frontier economy has faded and government giveaways have fallen out of political favor, the forest products industry's privileged grip on public resources has begun to slip. The current forest fires offer them an opportunity to try and regain some of their lost clout. The fires, timber industry spokesmen claim, are the result of restrictions on commercial logging on public lands. If all of these lands had been logged, they assert, the fires would not be burning. It is the federal government and the environmentalists, they are in cahoots who have caused the fires that now threaten us. As one timber industry advocate boldly said, I never saw a clear-cut burn. But nothing could be further from the truth. Of course clear-cuts burn. When long, hot summers dry out the grasses, brush, and logging waste, they can flare explosively. When they grow thick with closely packed young trees, they present exactly the fire danger we are wrestling with now. The logging roads provide human access that is the source of a vast majority of forest fires. If roading and logging eliminated the threat of wildfires, most of the fires that threaten us would now not be burning. Look at where these fires are. They are largely burning on the forest-urban interface in areas adjacent to intense human activity. In western Montana, for instance, the fires are burning in the forests adjacent to some of the rapidly growing residential areas in the nation, the Bitterroot, Helena, and Clark Fork Valleys. These are not roadless areas that have never been logged. Quite the contrary, they are areas that are roaded and logged in the past. Those roads have often provided access for human activity that now dominates these areas, including the home-building residential settlement of the last two decades and recreational activities. The trees now burning are usually second growth that followed past logging. The bulk of the fires burning are burning outside of roadless and wilderness areas. At last count in western Montana, over 75% of the burn acreage lies outside of protected areas like national parks and wilderness. Even more telling, 96% of the firefighting effort is focused on roaded and developed areas where human lives, homes, and other structures are threatened. It is not primarily battling wilderness fires. Commercial logging and the roads associated with it do not reduce the threat of wildfire. They do the opposite. The timber industry has been as insistent as anyone else that all wildfires be extinguished immediately, thus over the decades allowing the fuel loads in our forests to build. Commercial logging does not remove dangerous fuel loads. Instead, it takes the largest, most valuable, and most fire-resistant trees, leaving behind a fire trap. Commercial logging is not a prescription for forest health. It is one of the major causes of unhealthy forest conditions. until the forest products industry stops trying to insist that clear-cutting our public lands is necessary for the health of those lands, we will make no progress in restoring those lands. Equating forest health with timber company profits condemns out forests to either commercial ravages of the past or the management paralysis of the present. Both are bad for our forests and those of us who have chosen to live in beautiful but naturally dangerous forested landscapes. And the author of today's commentary, Thomas Michael Power, is a professor and chairman in the economics department of the University of Montana, Missoula, Montana. And the zip code 59812. You can give Tom a call, 406-243-4586. That's 406-243-4586. Or you can write to him at tmpower@selway.umt.edu. Once again, that's tmpower@selway, S-E-L-W-A-Y, .umt.edu. And I'm sure he'll be glad to hear your comments. Let's get back into news here. Fur golf. 180 protesters demonstrate against fur farming in Finland. The Finnish Fur Breeders Association organized a golf camp championship for fur farmers on the 5th of August. This was not an ordinary golf competition. It was held in Kalajoki, a small town in the western part of Finland with around 80 fur farms. The surrounding area is the most concentrated fur farming area in Finland. It contains over 1,000. I guess that's Finland has over 1,000 fur farms. Finnish animal rights activists organized free buses from around Finland to demonstrate at what the fur farmers called fur golf. On the morning of the 5th, three buses full of people arrived in Kalajoki. More people arrived in vans and cars, and in total there were about 180. People came from Finland, Sweden, the United States, England, Holland, France, and a few other countries, too. First, there was a demo at a big fur farm a few kilometers away from the golf course. The farm holds over 10,000 foxes and mink. People ran around the back of the farm, but there was a ditch and a fence surrounding the farm, and inside the farm were private security guards with dogs. People left the farm to go to the golf course as the competition was about to start. A noisy demonstration started with slogans, whistles, and foghorns echoing around the golf course. Some people went off in small groups and walked around the golf course shouting at farmers. There were lots of police present, and they too had hired a bus, but for a different purpose, to hold anyone who was arrested. The demonstration continued throughout the day. When the competition was ending and the farmers were leaving in their cars, the protesters ran to the road, blocking it for over half an hour. When the competition ended, people got in the buses again and headed for a Finnish fur research center about a half an hour's drive away from Kalajoki. The manager of the research center came out, guarded by police, and promised to answer any questions people might have. This was probably because the media followed us there. The first question was, how can you claim you are doing independent research when you are being funded by the Fur Breeders Association? No reply. Another question, no reply. In the end, he just left and didn't answer any of our questions. Some people walked around the place and others shouted slogans. After this, one of the buses decided to go and visit one more fur farm. This was a big fur farming area which contains tens of thousands of animals, both fox and mink. Lots of fur farmers were there guarding their farms. People got off the bus and photographed and filmed the animals and the farm for about half an hour. Many people were shocked at the huge scale of the farms because they'd never seen a fur farm before and the conditions the animals were in were disgusting. This was the first time there's ever been an animal rights demonstration in the most concentrated fur farming area in Finland. There were nearly 200 people and we had a brilliant, noisy, and angry demo. There were no arrests. The coverage in the newspapers was wide and quite positive. New people who came to the demo were inspired and want to get more involved. The most important thing is that we showed the fur farmers the anti-fur movement is still very strong and will not go away. We will continue until the last fur farm has closed down. And in related news, here's a communique. In the early hours of the 6th of August, the Tony Humphreys Commando Unit of the Animal Liberation Front set fire to two storage buildings on the property of Hessink in Barkham. That's in Holland. The farm has been visited two times before by ALF. The successful liberation of more than 10,000 mink meant that Hessink had followed in the footsteps of his colleagues and had improved security on his farm. We discovered that he had electrified the inside of his fence, which protects the farm. It seemed that this time we would not be able to open the cages. Hessink also had two large storage areas on his property. When we entered those, we discovered they contained not only machines used to kill and skin mink, but also the box which controlled the security system. We had a good look in the area and then retreated. If we wanted to open the cages, we would first need to disable that security system. With jerry cans containing petroleum, you can get them anywhere. We approached the property of Hesink early on the morning of the 6th of August. The light was burning in the living room, and it looked like he was watching TV. The light stayed on for a long time, so we decided it was time to put words into action. Soon the whole place was in flames, and we left the scene very fast. Less than 24 hours passed, and we returned to the farm. It seemed that Hesink was asleep. We destroyed part of the fence and entered the farm. We noted that part of the farm was empty because Hesink had violated some laws governing fur farming and had to close down part of his operations. Cages were open and many mink had the chance to escape. There will soon be a sizable population of wild mink in the Atcherhoek. That refers to an area in Holland where the raid took place. Gerrit de Jong of the Fur Animal Research Center Spelderholt in Bergen has stated that he believes that mink are able to survive and fend for themselves in the wild. Hesink and his colleagues know that the industry is coming to an end. The decision from the government to ban fur farming will come soon. The fur farming industry in Holland will disappear. In addition, all these legal activities to stop the industry, there is us. The effect of the Animal Liberation Front is so widespread that the whole industry is under pressure. Direct action increases the pressure even more. Farmers will lie awake at night fearing their farm will be visited. That fear is very realistic. Security systems can be disabled. Now is the time to act. The farms are full of young mink that will be killed in the autumn. Fur farmers speak of euthanasia. We call it murder. Mink are gassed and then skinned. Their skinned bodies are thrown on a heap and taken away to destruction companies. The ALF, Animal Liberation Front, is opposed to this industry. The animals need our help. Today, not tomorrow. Break out of your inactivity and become active with the ALF. Vegan Power, Vegan Revolution, the Tony Humphreys Commando Units. And moving to the United States, threats and assaults against federal wildlife staff of the Fish and Wildlife Service is now being tracked. For the first time in its history, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has begun compiling records of threats and harassment against employees, according to reports released by the Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility and Employee Advocacy Group. In 1999, the service documented 7 incidents of violence or threats of violence, including assaults and death threats ranging from Nebraska to Guam. But employee surveys suggest that many more incidents go unreported. Unlike other federal resource management agencies, such as the U.S. Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management, the Fish and Wildlife Service in recent years has responded to Freedom of Information Act requests from the Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility by saying that it has no records of even a single incident against a staff member serving on any of the more than 500 national wildlife refuges spread across the U.S. PIR has been compiling data on threats against resource agency employees since the 1995 bombing in Oklahoma City. Last December, a PIR survey of refuge managers found that 32% of respondents experienced threats or harassment against members of their family or refuge staff in connection with resource management decisions. Nearly half of those who reported incidents said that they were not encouraged to report the incidents to the Fish and Wildlife Service. One case reported by the Fish and Wildlife Service involved the Guam National Wildlife Refuge, where political disputes over refuge ownership have become increasingly violent over the last few years. Last October, refuge officer Steve Berger received death threats and was assaulted the next day. 2 days after that assault, Berger was chased into his office by an angry mob. Not included in the Fish and Wildlife Service report was the fact that refuge supervisor Robert DeRosa was similarly assaulted by an irate anti-government gang on the eve of the 1999 New Year. And if you are a public employee and you want to contact the Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility, contact Rainin Schechner, the number 202-265-7337. Once again, that number for Rainin Schechner, 202-265-7337, and perhaps the Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility can help you guard the environment better. Jean Chrétien, Prime Minister of Canada, has received a celebratory cream pie in the lobby of the PEI Civic Center to commemorate Old Home Week. Members of the PIE Pie Brigade braved the infamous Schwanigan handshake in order to offer the Roundup Ready Franken Cream Pie to Jean Chrétien, the first head of state to receive the distinction of being pied. One onlooker said, quote, "I think the pie thrower should receive a trophy instead of handcuffs." But the pie thrower was arrested, taken to the Charlottetown police station, charged with assault, and released after being brought before a justice of the peace this afternoon. The next court date was set for August 31st. While there are a multitude of reasons to pie Chrétien, this action was intended specifically to highlight and criticize the roles of Chrétien and his government in pushing unlabeled, untested Franken crops on the Canadian country and the world. The Canadian government has given many millions of dollars to the biotech industry, rubber stamped their crops without independent testing, and the Chrétien flies all around the world to try and pressure countries like France to accept these untested genetic technologies. While countries around the world are turning their backs on GE crops and foods, the federal government is increasing their public relations offensive to convince citizens of so-called benefits while denying the risk. This criminal behavior has forced the PEI Pie Brigade into action. In 1998, Chrétien compared getting pied to getting a reward or a prize, which many other personalities have already received. He used Bill Gates as a brilliant example of the kind of important person to receive such a high distinction. We will now see whether Chrétien accepts this prize in good humor, or will he overreact like Stéphane Dion and continue to pursue charges with an election in the near future. The PEI Pie Brigade wishes people across the country a happy pie season, also known as election season, and encourages others to show their dissatisfaction with this corporate-financed electoral system. If you'd like more information, contact the PEI Pie Brigade at hotmail.com. That's P-E-I-P-I-E Brigade, B-R-I-G-A-D-E. That's all one word, at hotmail.com. The pie is the limit. Qui pied pois. I believe my French is awful. Support villagers arrested for fighting the Kalabagh Dam in Pakistan on July 27th. More than 100 people were arrested and 24 injured as police tried to disrupt a scheduled rally against the proposed Kalabagh Dam in Pakistan. Police shut down roads leading to the rally, forcing protesters to scramble for a new demonstration site. Police then ordered the demonstrators to disperse and attack the protesters with batons and tear gas. One of the leaders, Rasul Bix Baliho, denounced the police actions as barbarism and violation of human rights and said such tyrannies could not compel the people of Sindh province to give up their protest campaign against the Kalabagh Dam, which is a matter of life and death for them. The $4.9 billion Kalabagh Dam threatens to displace 124,000 people and cause severe environmental impacts in the Indus Basin of the Sindh province. The project has received financial support from the World Bank, Asian Development Bank, and the Italian and Japanese governments. We urge you to take action to support people fighting against the Kalabagh Dam in Pakistan. Some facts on the Kalabagh Dam. It was rejected by the elected parliaments of 3 out of 4 affected provinces in Pakistan. It violates the water distribution accord between Sindh and Punjab provinces. As we stated before, it will displace 124,000 people living in Sindh, Balochistan, and Northwest NWFP provinces. Will stop sediment transport vital to the health of the Indus Delta. Currently, the Delta receives only 6% of the silt it has historically received due to dams and diversions. The Delta has shrunk from 350 square kilometers to about 25 square kilometers. That's about an eightfold reduction. It will submerge at least 35,000 acres of land. It threatens the survival of the already endangered Indus dolphin, polyfish, and sea cat, and will destroy a mango grove forest. If you want more information, go to the following webpage, www.saveindus.org. That's SAVEINDUS.org. If you'd like further information, contact the World Sindhi Institute, 605 G Street Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20024. Or you can call 202-484-0134. That's 202-484-0134. Or send email to WSIHQ at worldsindhi.org. That's WORLDSINDHI. Sindhi, I guess, .org. And let's get to some good news here. Good news is always rare. We have good news from Oregon. The Forest Service suspends plans to log 300 acres. There's trouble finding buyers, which has derailed logging in the Mount Hood National Forest. Story written by Jillian Flaccus of the Associated Press. I hope that's a real name. Jillian Flaccus of the Associated Press. The U.S. Forest Service said Monday it has indefinitely suspended plans to log almost 300 acres of Mount Hood National Forest because it has had trouble finding a buyer for the timber. In addition, the cost of surveys for certain rare species that depend on the stands of Douglas fir and hemlock is higher than the Forest Service anticipated, said Paul Bryant, Zigzag Forest District Ranger. The agency will suspend the 240-acre Salmon Curve sale and won't log the remaining 50 acres of the Roundup sale, Bryant said. The Forest Service has had trouble finding a buyer to log the Salmon Curve sale since it went on the market in 1998, he said. Bryant said he didn't know how much the surveys for rare species would cost. Environmental groups called Monday's decision a victory, citing only one other instance this year where the Forest Service dropped plans this far into the process. Logging companies likely shied away from the Salmon Curve sale, originally proposed to improve the appearance of existing clear-cuts seen from the Timberline Lodge, because of tough restrictions on the sale to minimize impact on the nearby Pacific Crest Trail and the Salmon River, Bryant said. This success underscores the importance of ground-truthing sale units and coupling public outreach with litigation as necessary. The Oregon Natural Resources Council thanks BARC for a job well done. We thank you for that also. And from New Mexico, the Forest Service has withdrawn the Corner Mountain salvage timber sale on New Mexico's Gila National Forest in response to an appeal filed by the Center for Biological Diversity, the Forest Conservation Council, and the National Forest Protection Alliance. The sale would have clear-cut 2.5 million board feet of ponderosa pine and Douglas fir on 340 acres. The Forest Service refused to analyze the effects of logging on indicator species, including the hairy woodpecker, the pygmy nuthatch, the violet green swallow, and the purple martin, as well as mammals such as elk, wild turkey. I didn't know that wild turkey was a mammal. Come on, Center for Biological Diversity, get your news straight. Wild turkeys are birds, not mammals. Anyway, and Albert's squirrels. Now, there's a mammal if I've ever heard of one. For more information, contact Kieran Suckling at the Center for Biological Diversity. And you can send him email at ksuckling, K-S-U-C-K-L-I-N-G, at biologicaldiversity.org. Veterans protest West Leiden. I don't know where West Leiden is. If you know where West Leiden is, fill it in for me, but it doesn't say on this news. Anyway, this story written by Elizabeth Mundshank of the Associated Press and John Kekis of the Associated Press. Up here at the edge of the Adirondack Mountains where cornfields, hayfields, and woodlands meet the sky, they want to build something new, a dump. A dump that would stand beside a forest dedicated to war veterans. Bob Wilson, a 56-year-old Vietnam veteran with the shrapnel scars on his left leg, said he can't believe it. This is a sanctuary, Wilson said, as he joined about 50 other veterans in a protest last week to block the proposed dump in Ava. I gave my wife her diamond ring right up here, he said. I went to Vietnam not knowing what I was fighting for. Here, I know what I'm fighting for. What Wilson and his comrades hope to preserve is the Veterans Memorial Forest, 798 acres of reforested land that was dedicated in 1953 by a nearby Veterans of Foreign Wars post. The authorities' dump proposal has been on the books since 1991. Ken Martin, a retired Marine who heads the group Vietnam's Defending Our Memorial Forest, said his stomach has been churning ever since. I was aghast, he said. I lost an awful lot of people, and I don't spend a day without thinking of them. Martin said a portion of the dump, which would be able to accept 220,000 tons of trash each year, would be 800 feet from the edge of the forest. It is projected to rise some 125 feet in the air before it reaches capacity in 60 years. That's twice as high as the trees in the forest. It's wrong to put garbage on their memories, Martin said. It will bring rats, seagulls, vermin, and seagull droppings to sacred land. Hans Arnold, who heads the Waste Authority, doesn't see it that way. We have a great respect for what the veterans have done, he said, but I don't think this would result in any disrespect to their memorial. I'm 100% confident that anything we do will not show any disrespect to them. And the Montana Supreme Court has affirmed a district court's decision barring the Department of Natural Resources and Conservation from logging the Middle Soup Creek project in the Swan Valley of Montana. The High Court agreed with the district court that the DNRC's analysis of cumulative impacts to old-growth forests and old-growth-dependent species was inadequate. The administrative rules of Montana clearly state the EIS shall contain a description of the cumulative impact and does not allow, as the DNRC suggests, mere analysis implicit within the EIS. The public is not benefited by reviewing an EIS which does not explicitly set forth the actual cumulative impacts analysis and the facts which form the basis for the analysis, the Supreme Court ruled. And the Friends of the Wild Swan brought this case against the DNRC in 1997. And if you'd like more information, contact Arlene Montgomery, Friends of the Wild Swan. And that number is 406-886-2011. That's 406-886-2011. And Uncle Dennis is tongue-tied once again. And unfortunately, that's just about all the time we have here. To get your news or announcements from your bioregent, Earth First Radio, send us email at cruzef@cruzio.com. That's cruzef@cruzio.com. Or you can send letters to Earth First Radio. We're at P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. That's Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Be sure to send those announcements at least 3 weeks in advance. If you want more in-depth news and information about the Earth First Movement, please subscribe to the Earth First Journal. Their address is P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. That's the Earth First Journal, P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. And you can listen to Earth First Radio live on your computer every Thursday night at 8 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Go to the website www.microradio.net/FRSC and download the player, and then you can listen in when we're on the air, that is. There are lots of great shows on Free Radio Santa Cruz anytime. You can always find Earth First Radio archive shows on the World Wide Web at www.radioforall.net. That's www.radio4all.net. And the software you need to play the MP3 files is free on the website. Earth First Radio is carried on a growing number of free speech and non-commercial radio stations. Please ask your local station to carry Earth First Radio. Earth First Radio is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. Our theme music was written and performed by Daryl Cherney from the CD Keep It Wild. I'm Uncle Dennis. Thank you for listening to Earth First Radio.
I went into the new Greenpeace store in the mall in Beverly Hills and asked if I could buy a little piece of nature that I could put in the corner of my living room. And guests could come out and pick it up and look at it and ask me where I got it. But it was not on sale because it was the last one and it was kind of expensive and the employee almost looked as if he would miss it. Apparently it was out of stock for good and all the people in the store looked at me with big eyes as if I had just burned down their house or something. So I had the last piece of nature. It's not like they couldn't make more. Obviously they'd been selling well. The market was there. If Greenpeace stopped making these things, someone would jump on it and make big bucks. But as I was leaving, a pack of bears, beavers, mountain lions, deers, and all kinds of fuzzy creatures stormed into the store. The assistant manager yelled, "There are no animals allowed in the store." But two bears went straight for the cash register and ran off. I was shocked that anyone could steal from Greenpeace. How are they going to save the environment without money? The animals caused total havoc, running around the store and knocking things over. The minimum wage paid employees said, "Fuck this," and got the hell out of there. It was just an after-school job anyways, but the management was stuck there. This was how they were making a living. They called security, who didn't know what to do, and called the police. The two bears with the cash register got run over by a car on their way home and were some pretty scary, weird-looking highway roadkill. The police saw the animals causing chaos and the managers hidden behind the nature's cosmetics display and opened fire and killed all the animals, which was police policy in the case of animals attacking humans. It was a big mess, but the story got in the newspaper and lots of people came down to the Greenpeace store and bought stuff faster than they could restock the shelves. Thank you very much. That's it.